When Life Hands You a Lemon Fruit Bomb by A. Marie. When I was 10, the orcs dropped out of the clear summer blue sky and landed in the middle of Central Park. They were in something that looked like one of our ships, only a lot bigger, with a lot less attention to aesthetic. I was at home in Brooklyn, sitting at the kitchen table, playing cards with my Uncle Junior and Cynthia Four. She wasn't playing because that capability was broken, and I was just reintroducing myself for the third time in 20 minutes, thanks to her facial recognition being shot. Yet another concession my uncle had to deal with, her being non-certified, pre-owned AI and whatnot. Anyway, on the wall we watched as more of these ships came down all over the world, looking like the latest publicity stunt for some rapper's album. Only, they were shooting people with laser guns and their victims didn't look like extras. They were cabbies and women with shopping bags, and kids with hover soles and shawarma-eating pedestrians and police officers and foreign tourists with old-school point-and-shoot camera phones, and not one of them was getting up. Afterward, Uncle June covered the windows with tinfoil, baked me his famous miniature sweet potato pies, and spent the rest of the day holding me under one arm, as if I were a package he'd sworn to keep safe, which really, I sort of was. After half a week, Uncle June ventured outside every day, patrolling the neighborhood in his Cadillac, riding farther and farther out, searching for anyone who might need help. "You can't keep doing that," I'd say, but we both knew what I was really saying. "Keep this up and one day you won't come back." But he'd shake his head. "Little bit, you know I can't stay up in here while people out there need food, water, a ride, a shoulder." One time I blocked the door. "You can't save the world, Uncle June." And he paused long enough for me to think that maybe I'd gotten through. But then he shrugged. "You do what you can, little bit." He grabbed his homemade first aid kit and the plastic containers he'd filled with tap water and nudged me out of the way and didn't come back all day. Not long after that, we got a call from Uncle June's aunt's best friend, Judith. She and her prayer circle were having a hard time. They were a handful of old ladies who didn't have any family, read protection, and Judith begged Uncle June to come down to Baltimore and help. The orcs hadn't brought their killing spree down there yet, but there'd been several break-ins. It took him a while, but seeing as there weren't as many living people to help around the neighborhood, he agreed. I think leaving New York had a lot to do with me, with the promise he made my dad. Dad never would have expected me to be in the latest sneakers or have the latest neutral net upgrade, but Uncle June and I both knew that at the very least, Dad would have expected his brother to keep me alive. What I do way out here in the boonies of space means the difference between life and death for my uncle. I'll get something, Uncle June. I promise. I've just 30 minutes ago finished patrolling the perimeter of Savior One. I sped around in a gleaming pod, blending in as much as a white washing machine amongst a heap of ashes as I swiveled my head to peer through the domed glass of the two-seater. Eyes going 360 while my hands itched for my rifle. We've been here 26 days, more like 1.5 Earth months. And forget finding a metropolis or Orc City. We haven't found a single campsite, but we know they're burrowed somewhere in this watery ghost planet. Now I'm sitting in the Orc prison, the dim light of a distant red giant seeping through the tiny cell window. I'm glad to have finished my patrol before dark. I much prefer being indoors over being outside, where a swamp the size of an ocean is interrupted only by patches of blood-red grass and black prickly trees and islands of bushes that look nightmarish under the reddish light of the sun and, worse, under the blood light of the double moons. We sit silently at a metal table, Orc number 176 cuffed to a chair, watching me as I wait for my NeutralNet translation program to load. As usual, the speaker that plays our translations sits between us.